Women's Healing Circle with Cheryl Selman, Sundays at 4 on the Progressive Radio Network.
Hello and welcome into the Women's Healing Circle. This is a call-in show to help women of all ages get their hormones back on track naturally, as well as explore safe and holistic solutions for women's unique health challenges. And I'm your host. I'm Dr. Cheryl Selman. I'm a naturopathic doctor, author, senior editor for several online health magazines, and radio host on this very network. I have two women's radio shows. One is Today, obviously, and then the other one is called What Women Must Know, and that's every Monday at 2 p.m. on this very network. And I am passionate about getting truthful information out there to women to support them getting empowered with the knowledge to allow them to make the best decisions possible. So I'm so pleased you are with me today and are joining me into the Women's Healing Circle. We have a really important show. Before I begin the topic at hand, I want to remind everyone that you really want to go to my website, whatwomenmustknow.com, opt in, and you can also go to my Facebook page, which is facebook.com/whatwomenmustknow, because we are beginning a series starting today regarding the truth about the cervical, quote unquote, cervical cancer vaccine Gardasil. This is an ongoing series. We're launching it today. I will fill you in with the rest of the important information, how to listen to the many segments that will be available through my e-list or through my Facebook page. So you've got to sign up, you have to opt in, or just become a friend on Facebook to get the rest of the ongoing interviews, because there is so much to say on this topic that we are going to have an extended series. So many of you know I have been a passionate advocate for getting truthful information out to women. And whenever I discover an untruth or a disservice to women or lies or whatever it is that I feel is doing a disservice to the health and well-being of women, I write about it, I talk about it, I try to disseminate the real story. In 2007, when I was introduced for the first time to the cervical cancer vaccine, the Gardasil vaccine, I began to investigate it, and what I came across once again alarmed me. I felt that we were not being given the truth by any means, and I wrote an article about it. In fact, if you go to my articles page on whatwomenmustknow.com, it's posted up there. Well, recently the Gardasil issue has raised its head again, for I hope for the better, because it is bringing again awareness, public awareness, media awareness to the issue of this new vaccine called Gardasil that is being distributed to young girls throughout the world, actually. It is now being included in vaccines for young boys or men. And there is a big, big, big story here, a huge story, because this vaccine, which right now there's a bill on the governor's desk in California to mandate this vaccine along with a couple of other vaccines for sexual health reasons without notifying parents that their children will be vaccinated, which may become a precedence that will be picked up by other states. So this is relevant whether you have children or whether you are associating with people in your community. You need to have this information, and it is particularly important for the health and well-being of our children. So to really explore this issue and to dissect the various aspects of the Gardasil story, I am joined by two wonderful guests, two very dedicated guests on this issue. First of all, Norma Erickson will be joining us. She is president of Sane Vax. She was once a freelance writer and independent business consultant. Her writing was primarily dedicated to providing information surrounding the vaccination controversy. Being a firm believer in fair and balanced journalism, research was a high priority. The discoveries made during that research led directly to the creation of SANE, that is SANE Vax, an organization dedicated to creating a world where only safe, affordable, necessary, and effective vaccines are allowed, which is the acronym for SANE. She strongly believes every medical consumer has the right to complete and accurate information regarding the risks as well as the benefits of vaccines prior to deciding whether a particular vaccine is right for them. Her mission is to provide that information in a clear, concise, easy-to-understand format so people are able to make informed decisions about their health and well-being. As always, you know, informed decisions, that's what we want. And her website is SaneVax, SaneVax.org. We're also joined by Rosemary Mathis, who is a finance manager for one of the world's largest retailers and the mother of a vaccine-injured child. She is also co-founder of TruthAboutGardasil.org. That's the website, TruthAboutGardasil.org, including founding chairman. She is determined that each parent has the right to full disclosure of potential side effects of a vaccine prior to their child's vaccination. Her mission is to help increase transparency in regards to vaccines to prevent others from experiencing the pain and loss that so often comes from lack of research prior to release of vaccine products. Her goal is to aid in the education of others to prevent injury and harm, including networking to instill tighter controls on government-approved vaccines, ensuring the safety of our children. So these two women have been extremely dedicated to uncovering the truth about Gardasil. And since we are hearing a lot about it, I've been hearing experts talk on all sorts of TV and radio stations. Unfortunately, it makes me sick to hear what they're saying. So it's time that we really got to the bottom of this matter. And that's what this show is all about. And as I said in the opening comments, I will be working with Norma and Rosemary and other respected researchers, writers, investigative reporters, and parents who have important information to share on the truth about Gardasil in the weeks ahead. So please stay tuned, opt into my site, go up and befriend me on Facebook so you can listen, because this show is just the beginning of an ongoing series. To get the rest of the show, you have to actually be on my e-list or my Facebook page. So, Norma and Rosemary, thank you so much for being here today. I'm so looking forward to our conversation.
Oh, Cheryl, thank you for having us. We certainly appreciate the opportunity to get this out in the public view.
I mean, this is a really moving story. I feel that as you will help enlighten us, and Rosemary, I know you have a really sad story to tell, not only your own experience, but so many of the others. I've actually been to your site, well, both your sites, and, you know, I had a look at really the heartbreaking victims of this vaccine. But I want to start us at the beginning, because we want to build the story and we want to unravel this whole entire issue in the light of truth, not in the light of propaganda, of advertising campaigns. So we're going to dismantle this Gardasil issue. And I think I'd like to ask each of you to start. First of all, maybe you can start, Norma. Is really, how did you come to take this on and be so committed to it?
Well, I was working as a freelance journalist and writing articles about vaccines across the United States. And I came across a story about six women who were going to make a presentation to the FDA regarding the relatively new Gardasil vaccine. So I called one of them, and that was the beginning of the end for me. What I found out from these women and their research, and I verified their research, it was just absolutely appalling. And I couldn't know what I knew then and look at myself in the face if I didn't do anything about it.
Did you have children that were going to be vaccinated, or did you just feel it was imperative to take on this cause?
It was imperative. There was no way that I could have the information that I had and walk down the street and see a 12 or 13-year-old girl thinking I didn't do anything to prevent her being harmed or potentially harmed. I have to say that, potentially harmed. This vaccine obviously does not harm everyone yet.
Or not everyone right away.
Yes.
All right. And Rosemary, how did you find yourself on this path and on this mission?
Well, I had a 12-year-old daughter back in February 2008, and I took her to her pediatrician's office. And remember now, I live in small-town USA. I live in Wilkesboro, North Carolina, which is a very small town in the mountains of North Carolina. So I'm used to trusting people, trusting my doctors. I grew up with the same, going to the same doctor's office that my daughter goes to. I just trusted doctors in the medical community. And the pediatrician that gave her the vaccine had been her doctor since he was a baby. And he was pushing a cancer vaccine and said it was critical that she received it. And as a good mother, I should ensure that she received it and received each dose on time. And the only side effect was redness and swelling around the injection site. And he really wanted her to have that vaccination, and he kept pushing it and talking about it. And I trusted him and let him give it to her. And 16 days later, that's after her first dose, she became very ill. She had headache, nausea, dizziness, and severe stomach pain. And I took her back to the same pediatrician who said it was a virus and unrelated to the vaccine. And I still trusted him, and she was out of school about a week after the first shot. And then in April of 2008, thinking I was still being a good parent, I took her for her second shot. And 16 days later, she became ill again. And I took her to the doctor, and she had the same symptoms, headache, nausea, dizziness, and severe stomach pain. And again, I questioned the doctor, and he said, no, it is a virus. And he said, there are many kids that have been in my office, and this is going around the schools. The odds are slim to none that it would be the vaccine. So she missed another week of school. And then in August, my daughter went back for her third shot on August 18th, 1 week before her 13th birthday and before the beginning of school. And we'd just been shopping for school, and she was all excited about going to school and getting new clothes and everything related to the upcoming school year. And it was going to be her last year in middle school. And she made it through the first week of school, and then 16 days later, she became violently ill. She couldn't function. She couldn't go to school. She couldn't go to church. She was completely bedridden. She complained of headaches, sensitivity to light, brain freezes, abdominal pains, dizziness, and nausea. And I immediately took her back to the same doctor, and he told me again she had a virus. Well, that virus never got better. I took her back to school every day, or took her back to the doctor every day that week and questioned the vaccine, and he kept saying, no, it's a virus, and it's going to run its course. So getting tired of taking her to the same doctor, I immediately, by the end of that week, rushed her to Brenner's Children's Hospital in Winston-Salem, which is about 1 hour from my home. And in the meantime, I had also seen another pediatrician in my hometown that sent her to Forsyth Medical Center in Winston-Salem, an hour away, for a HIDA scan on her gallbladder. The two hospitals consulted with each other, and because her HIDA scan had shown that her gallbladder was only functioning at 7%, she was sent for surgery to remove it. she made it as far as the surgeon at Wake Forest Brenner's Hospital, but thank God he did his job. He refused to remove her gallbladder because he believed something else was going on. And he put her on heavy doses of antibiotics for about a month to see what would happen. And I allowed this, even though in the meantime my daughter was in severe pain because her gallbladder was not functioning. And she toughed it out for that month, and by the time she went back, it was working again. So the surgeon said that was not a normal thing to happen, that your gallbladder just doesn't stop working and then start back. So he refused to do the surgery, and he sent her back to Brenner's Children's Hospital and told them they need to relook at it again. So we spent tens of thousands of dollars out of pocket to seek treatment, and she was severely ill that whole school year, and she missed over 100 days of school. And the 100 days that she was allowed to go to school, she maybe went 2 hours a day, but her principal, she had a wonderful principal, and he let her come sit in his office and be counted there as long as she could pass. You couldn't have asked for a better principal. But she was an honor student and an AG student, so he knew this was not typical for her. But she was completely homebound until about February when we started her on high doses of vitamins, and it helped her recover some. And she showed improvement. And then Wake Forest Brenner's Children's Hospital did an upper GI on her, which showed sores inside her abdomen. And that's where she was complaining of the pain. And they said it was very unusual for a child of that age to have sores in their abdomen. And they didn't know what was wrong, so they sent her back to her pediatrician and said that that this was not a typical GI patient and that he needed to seek a specialist for her, and that they believed the injury was from the vaccine. So I immediately took her back to her pediatrician, and he didn't agree with Wake Forest. And he said before he would believe it was the vaccine, I would have to go to Duke University or to the super doctors, as he referred to them, and receive confirmation. And I feel I'm very lucky that I do live in North Carolina, because we do have a very good medical system here. So I called Duke, and I was put on a waiting list. And then my daughter and I started traveling back and forth to Duke University's Children's Hospital in Durham, which is 2 hours away from my home. And I took a box full of tests and information about what my daughter was going through. I explained that I thought it was related to the HPV vaccine, Gardasil, and that she had become ill after each injection, and that no one would seem to listen. I explained that Wake Forest had done a wonderful job, but my pediatrician keeps pushing back. I pulled out my folder of information I had obtained to prove to the doctor that the other girls were having the same side effects. And I went in, you know, ready to fight my daughter's fight. And I was just so used to having to prove to the doctors what was going on. And they ran several tests, and the doctors explained what he saw. And he looked me straight in the eye, and he said, "Your daughter has a vaccine injury, no doubt." He said he had been a doctor for 40 years and that it would take her at least 3 years to overcome such an injury. And I just sat and looked at him because I had fought the battle so long and spent so much money just having to prove what was going on with my daughter. Because these doctors, a lot of them don't seem to care. I met a few that did care. I met a lot of doctors who don't even know what the vaccine adverse event recording system is. So I'd have to explain to them that they needed to file reports to VAERS. And I told the doctor at Duke that I was just surprised that he came out that fast and said it when I had spent tens of thousands of dollars going to the doctor. And he said that he had no doubt that what I was saying was true, and that he thought he would be able to help her. And in the meantime, I went back and told my pediatrician that his super doctor had said that she did have a vaccine injury and that I had personally reported the injury to VAERS. I told him that I believed that he was required by law to report it to VAERS, and he better do so immediately because I had already filed a report. So he immediately did. He took all the records from Duke and Wake Forest and filed a report to VAERS. And that I, as a parent, don't feel like I should have to do that with an injured child. I should not have to push a doctor that hard to report something to VAERS. So in my heart, I know VAERS is not correct. I know doctors are not reporting to VAERS.
So, Rosemary, what's the status of your daughter now? How old is she now?
She just turned 16, and we were talking about it last week. She says she believes she's well about 60% of the time now. She's still sick, but nothing like she was.
I'm so sorry to hear that. It's unfortunately a story that isn't unique to your daughter. Norma, let's just lay out the facts, okay? So first of all, this is Gardasil, which is the vaccine that was brought out 2007. Is that when it emerged for public consumption?
2006.
Okay, it's promoted as a cervical cancer vaccine. What's the truth about this?
No, it has never been proven to have any effect on cervical cancer. Cervical cancer takes 15 to 20 years to develop. They used endpoints in their clinical trials. They, being Merck, used endpoints in the clinical trials that normally heal themselves. We won't know if this vaccine has any effect on cancer whatsoever for at least 15 to 20 years. The manufacturer, the FDA, the CDC claim these endpoints were okay, but the real truth is most of them reverse on their own, and there are multiple scientific papers verifying that information. So let's just give the stats about
cervical cancer, about HPV. What are the stats? Because when you see these ads, and I've been looking at the ads on Rosemary's site, there is a wonderful, we'll talk about the documentary that's being produced, but it's talking about one less person, we're going to lose one less person. I mean, how many people are we talking about in the United States that are diagnosed with cervical cancer, and how many people actually die? And of those that die, you told me an interesting fact, Norma, before the show. So let's explain that part of it.
The fact is approximately 12,000 people in the United States are diagnosed with cancer on an annual basis.
Cervical cancer. These are women.
Okay. Of those 12,000, approximately, oh my goodness, the figure just went out of my brain. Less than 2,000.
4,000? I think you said 4,000.
4,000. 4,000 will actually die. Of those cases, 50% of the cervical cancer cases diagnosed in the United States are either women who have never had a pap smear or have not had one in the last 5 years. This disease has been relegated to basically immigrants and uninformed in the United States.
So essentially what you were saying is that a small number of women are diagnosed. A very small number of women, 4,000 or so, actually die of cervical cancer, right, a year.
Yes.
And I think you gave me a statistic I have here in my notes that 90% of these women never had a pap smear. So if they did not have the proper screening, put it this way, if they had the proper screening, because cervical cancer cervical dysplasia, the beginning of what can lead to cervical cancer, the infection due to the virus, HPV virus, could have been detected and they could have been reversed if they had proper screening and proper medical care, which they did not have.
Absolutely, and that's the crux of the problem here. Even if they take these HPV vaccines, because I absolutely categorically refuse to call them cancer vaccines, if they take these HPV vaccines, they still need pap smears on a regular basis. They need to do that anyway. So this vaccine is adding a very expensive insult to the top of a program that's effective and safe, and no one's ever died from a pap smear.
So, you know, the thing that really struck me is this. It's a disease that kills. I mean, there are women that die of it. Primarily, there are women who never got proper pap smears and treatments, because if they did, that number would reduce to a negligible amount. And it's a horrible thing that women have died of any type of cancer. But this is a small number in the population of 100 million or so women in the United States, 4,000. And the other key thing that is so critical to make people aware of is that this vaccine is promoted as a cervical cancer vaccine, but it is not preventing cervical cancer. What is it doing, Norma? Tell us.
It is preventing infection by two types of human papillomavirus that evolved. HPV has not even been proven to cause cancer by itself. You must also have another risk factor involved, such as smoking, multiple sex partners, multiple births.
And oral contraceptives.
Yes, use of oral contraceptives.
So because of the fact that this is an infection that can easily be reversed, the body will in 50% of the cases, the body's immune system will reverse the infection, eliminate the infection, and so few women actually are at risk. And it doesn't really prevent cervical cancer. It's just preventing, reducing the risk of infection of only two of many other strains of viruses. And then there are also other factors that contribute to actual developing the stages of cervical cancer. Why are we giving it to millions and millions of children in the United States?
That is an extremely good question, and I'd like to point out here it's not 50% of those infections that clear on their own, it's 90%.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
So it's even worse. There is, in my mind, absolutely no reason for this vaccine at all. If a person doesn't have ongoing pap smears anyway, they're not going to catch potential lesions that may be caused by a relationship to other HPV strains. At least 14 have been linked to cervical cancer. This one covers two, perhaps a couple of more due to cross-protection, they say.
Okay, so let's talk about the population that they're targeting. What's the age group now? I mean, is it younger than 12, 11, 12?
It goes down to 9 at the moment.
Okay, so children as young as 9, obviously not sexually active children, are the targeted population for this vaccine. Why?
Well, their hope is that by reaching children before they become sexually active, that they will prevent HPV infections before they occur. The problem with that theory is, for instance, Gardasil, the clinical trials ran 5 years. We don't know anything about the efficacy of this vaccine beyond 5 years. So say, for instance, a child gets this vaccine at age 9. 5 years later, she's 14. Maybe will be sexually active, maybe not. Perhaps the protection has worn off. How many boosters are they going to need to maintain the titers that they think might be effective? No one knows. This is a vaccine where there are so many questions and no real answers.
So it's the most expensive vaccine in the history of vaccines. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So you need 3 doses, and it's, I don't know, anywhere from, I don't know, $300 to $600, depending who's giving them and how much they charge.
Yes.
And it's given to children before they become sexually active. So why are they recommending that this is a vaccine that's good for women from 9 to 26?
That's also a really good question. There have been some studies that showed that if a woman is pre-exposed to one of the vaccine-relevant strains of HPV, that this vaccine could actually enhance the possibility of precancerous lesions. So it may actually increase the risk of future cancer if you've already been exposed. If they were pre-screening women to see if they had been exposed to the vaccine-relevant strains before they vaccinated, it might be a good strategy, but they're not doing that.
Okay. And now they're expanding the population to young boys. Any evidence that that works? Any studies that have been done on giving this vaccine that was originally supposed to be given to young girls before they became sexually active, now giving preteen girls essentially. Now it is being given to preteen boys. Any evidence that this has any relevance to preventing HPV? And, well, they're only giving it to young boys, so they don't give it to young girls.
Okay.
Right.
It's pretty obvious boys don't have a cervix, so we're going to eliminate that argument. The benefit for boys, they say, is that the other two strains that are in the vaccine prevent the potential of genital warts. The theory on the high-risk strains are that the boys could theoretically transmit the high-risk strains to girls, and if they can eliminate the infection in the boys, they eliminate some girls being exposed to it.
So that means how many children are they targeting in the United States? Now we have young girls, we have young boys. Do you have any idea what the number is that fits into the category that are eligible for this vaccine?
You know, I really don't have that number because we've been working with this vaccine on a global scale, and their theory is every child
in the world. Oh, we're talking about potentially billions.
Billions.
Okay. So the other thing, everything that is promoted in the press, every radio interview that I have heard, I don't have television, so I've missed the television interviews except the ones I see on the internet, but every radio interview I have listened to, over and over again the doctors who are being interviewed say it's absolutely safe, absolutely safe, it's wonderful, everybody should have it, it's going to save lives. Okay, Norma, I want your take on it. Rosemary, you've already given your personal experience, but you've been doing even more research. Is this vaccine safe? And not only safe in regards to, you know, can we say it's not going to create any harmful effects, but is it actually a lethal, potentially lethal vaccine?
Okay. We don't have the scientific expertise to say categorically that it is not safe or safe. What we can say is that since HPV vaccines were released in the United States for public consumption, that HPV vaccines have been responsible for, now, okay, let's back this up just a little bit. The Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System is limited in its capability because only 1 to 10% of the actual new medical conditions occurring after vaccination are reported, and Rosemary can attest to this. She had personal experience with it. So we're talking, take any VAERS report and you can add a 0 or 2. That becomes pretty frightening. But there are 73 approved vaccines in the United States. HPV vaccines, during the time that they've been on the market in the United States, are responsible for 24% of all life-threatening events, 26% of all emergency room visits, 25% of all hospitalizations, 33% of all extended hospital stays, and 36% of disabling events.
Wow, that's just shocking because I think the number you gave me, just in emergency room visits, the ones that were reported, now you, the important point to remember is only 1 to 10% seem to be reported. So if you want to, you know, as you said, add more zeros, the number gets larger. But right now, is this 9,000 emergency room visits have been associated to the adverse reactions from Gardasil. Is that in the United States or is that worldwide?
VAERS accepts reports from worldwide, and we do, on our site, sanevax.org, we do count all of the ones that are reported in VAERS. So they will have about 10% of those, maybe 15, are from foreign countries.
Right. So there's a whole lot more. And what about recorded deaths?
there have been 103 reports of death.
You know, these are reports of death due to being given this vaccine.
Well,
and
you can't really say due to this vaccine.
What can you say?
To be accurate, you've got to say 103 deaths recorded after this vaccination, because we don't have proof of cause. No one has looked for proof of cause.
Right. So within how much time after the vaccine do these adverse reactions or even death occur?
Some of them are as little as 24 hours. Like Rosemary said, hers ran 16 days for her daughter.
Right.
There's a victim's mother in Canada that called me. Her daughter was 13, had the Gardasil injections, and 24 hours after her third injection, she was diagnosed with acute onset juvenile rheumatoid arthritis.
So what are some of the side effects associated with receiving this vaccine?
Rosemary, would you like to address that one? I think you probably have the list in front of you.
I do.
Oh, good.
It's huge. Their list that we have put together from what mothers have told us, it's a lot larger than the list that is recorded in the paperwork that comes with the vaccine. But we can...
Well, go through that list for the sake of everyone listening. So, you know, I mean, you were astute enough to make that connection, but, you know, you listened to your intuition because your doctor kept affirming the safety of the vaccine and that those symptoms were not related. But, you know, you really knew in your heart that was not true. And I think it's good to list those symptoms for everyone listening. So anyone who has a daughter who's, you know, maybe experiencing some of these conditions can put two and two together.
Okay. Abortion, stillbirth, miscarriage, Addison's disease, adrenal failure, adrenal issues, allergies, allergy, anxiety, panic attack, appetite loss, arthritis, asthma attacks, autistic-like symptoms, autoimmune disease, lupus, mixed connective tissue disease, back pain, bacterial vaginitis, bladder issues, bleeding gums, blindness, bloated, blood sugar issues, bloody stools, brain fog, brain inflammation, brain lesions, bronchitis, cervical cancer, chemical sensitivity, chest pains, convulsions, chronic fatigue syndrome, constipation, death, degenerative disc disease, dehydration, depression, diabetes, diarrhea, dizziness, dyslexia, dysplasia, early onset of menopause, enlarged fallopian tubes, enlarged liver, Epstein-Barr virus, extreme pain in the tailbone area, fainting, fatigue, fertility problems, fever blisters, fibromyalgia, food allergies, gallbladder issues, genital warts, gray film on teeth, Guillain-Barre syndrome, hair growth in strange places, hair loss, hallucinations, hand-leg weakness, head pressure, headache, hearing loss, permanent hearing loss, temporary, hearing sensitivity, heart palpitation, heart arrhythmia, high levels of metals in blood, aluminum, mercury, hot, cold intolerance, HPV, infertility, insomnia, itching, IUD discomfort, joint pain, kidney failure, kidney issues, knee pain, leaky gut syndrome, light sensitivity, liver failure, loss of bladder control, lupus, memory loss, long-term memory loss, short-term, menstrual cycle changes, metallic taste in mouth, migraines, miscarriage, mood swings, moles, increase of the number of moles, mono and multiple sclerosis, MS-like symptoms, muscle aches, muscle spasms, muscle tension, nausea, neurological symptoms, night sweats, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, numbness, other types of cancer, ovarian failure, paleness, paralysis, pancreatitis, PCOS, pelvic inflammatory disease, pelvic pain, personality changes, pins and needles in extremities, like numbness in the extremities, pneumonia, random twitching of extremities, rash, ruptured ovarian cyst, seizures, sensitivity to commercially processed citric acid, MSG, sulfur, and other additives, severe nerve pain syndrome, shortness of breath, sleep apnea, slurred speech, smell sensitivity, sore throat, sound sensitivity with anxiety, stomach ache, stomach pain, sudden drops in blood pressure, swelling edema, swollen lymph nodes, thyroid issues, tremors, hand and leg, uterine spasms, urinary tract infection, vision changes long-term, vision loss permanent, vision loss temporary, vision problem, vomiting, blood, weight gain, or loss of 20 to 30 pounds. And that's collected from different parents and different people that's had problems with this vaccine.
That is just so sad, you know. It's just, I don't, you know, you feel overwhelmed at the suffering that's been going on, and, you know, it just makes you so angry as well, because everyone is telling us, the public message, the message over all the media outlets from all the doctors, and who knows who these doctors are. I had somebody actually email me that was very upset with me challenging this wonderful, safe, and very important vaccine, and, you know, who am I to be saying this anyway? I'm not a doctor, so I'll have to send her this radio show. But anyway, Norma, you know, you were sharing with me when we first had our initial conversation about some of the shocking findings that have come to light about what actually has been discovered in this vaccine, which may give some insight as to why the body is reacting in so many ways and with so many chronic symptoms after exposure. Can you share with my audience some of the latest revelations about what is going on with this vaccine that no one is really talking about?
Absolutely. This June 12th to be exact, I had contact from a mother who I had already had previous conversations with, and she was frantic. Her daughter's blood had tested positive for HPV 2 years after vaccination. And the immediate response from all of her doctors and me and all of the experts that I knew was that this is impossible. HPV is an epithelial virus, doesn't survive for long in the blood. There's no way she could have tested positive through her blood for HPV after 2 years. And I searched and searched and searched. My whole team searched. All the experts we could find, everybody said the same thing. We came down to, okay, there's only one option left. Let's test a vial of Gardasil. We did. What we found in that vial was recombinant, which means genetically engineered, HPV particles of strain number 11 and strain number 18, otherwise known as genotypes, firmly attached to the aluminum adjuvant. Now, that poses several severe problems. DNA as a contaminant in vaccines has always been considered a health risk of some sort. They think, some studies lead them to believe, medical professionals, scientists, that this may institute the progression of cancer by genetically altering human cells, or it may lead to autoimmune diseases through an unknown mechanism of action, could lead to allergies. The point is, no one knows, and no one knew it was in there either. So immediately, of course, we decided, okay, this is really serious. Let's see if it's widespread. We got 12 additional vials from various parts of the world, 5 different countries.
Hello.
Australia, New Zealand, Spain, France, Poland, and 3 different states in the United States. 100% contaminated. All of them had either one or both strains of HPV in it. And
you know, that is so shocking because, first of all, I mean, this is this bizarre genetically modified virus that is being inoculated into all these children. Doesn't even exist before, doesn't even exist in nature. Secondly, it's also attached to aluminum, which we know is a toxic heavy metal that can cause all sorts of neurological problems as well as other toxicity in the body. And nobody's talking about this or acknowledging it. And I have to say, Norma, I'm so grateful for your wisdom and foresight and, knowledge to be able to go and actually test those different vials of the HPV vaccine around the world. That they all had it, right? They all had it. They all showed up positive.
Yes, we did not have one negative result.
Yeah, incredible.
And so, those were also... Everybody needs to know this. They were from four different manufacturing facilities. So this is not a problem that's with one manufacturing facility. It's with the entire process.
So as far as we know, this is found within all the vaccines that are now being used with our children.
As far as we know, yes.
Right. And go ahead.
The thing is, we're battling a long-standing FDA decision. Okay, when SB40 was discovered as a contaminant in the polio vaccines in 1984, the FDA's reaction was, and I quote, "Any possible doubts, whether or not well-founded, about the safety of the vaccine should not be allowed to exist in the view," and that's good enough, "should not be allowed to exist." Okay, whether well-founded or not, is this in the best interests of medical consumers worldwide? I don't think so.
Right. So we're talking about a vaccine that is addressing a condition, not a cancer, in a very few number of women, relatively speaking, in this country for sure. Certainly, 4,000 or so that would die, up to 98% probably would not have if they had proper pap smears and screening. We know that it is not as safe vaccine, and Rosemary's here to testify. How many people have you talked to, Rosemary? How many parents have you talked to of children who have been harmed by this vaccine in your work and through your website?
Oh, it's thousands, and at night we have a lot of Facebook groups that we talk through at Same Vaccs, and they're out there every night trying to figure out how to convince their doctors that this has caused injury to their child, and their doctors don't know what BARES is. They don't know how to report it, and we're trying to walk these mothers through reporting this so that their child is recorded in BARES. And one statistic that Norma, I think, may have left out of the BARES reports when she was reading it, that I think is very important, is if you take all the vaccinations that's out there, all 73 that Norma was talking about in total in BARES, since Gardasil was released on the market, Gardasil is the number one offender at 16%. It makes up 16% of that total database. And I know you hear a lot of people say the MMR vaccine causes a lot of harm to children. It only makes up 3.5%, and Gardasil makes up 16%.
Well,
and, here's a really good statistic that puts the whole problem into perspective. The death rate right now from cervical cancer in the United States is 2.4 people per 100,000. The current rate of adverse events after Gardasil injections is 3.34 per 100,000, and we don't know how many more will come from this contamination.
And we don't know the long-term effects of being exposed. And as we were saying, that we don't know how long the protection, quote-unquote protection, will last anyway. And it probably they're talking about booster shots, going on, forward into life, which is exposing us to more contamination.
Exactly.
And, as a naturopathic doctor, I have to say that with the proper nutrition, with, cervical cervical dysplasia, these preconditions that, if not treated, can lead to cervical cancer, are indications of deficiencies in folic acid and B12 and B6 and compromised immune system and, things that can be readily reversed, because I have with my patients if they just got their nutrition up and made some lifestyle and nutritional changes. So this is not a difficult condition to reverse if you just are willing to, understand the needs of the body and support it. A couple of things, because we're coming to the end of our interviews. Fortunately, I just want to remind everyone listening again that with Norma's help and Rosemary's help, who have tremendous contacts around the world, we are going to be producing a series of conversations with leading investigators, researchers, doctors, parents on the real story of the Gardasil vaccine, what every parent should know. And I've just really become passionate to get this information out, because it's so hard to find. And it's so hard to find all of it in one place. So for sure, opt into my website. For sure, get onto my Facebook page. That's how you will be sent these conversations, which will be happening over the next few weeks. I want Norma and Rosemary, I want you both to be sure to share your website addresses. So if people want to learn more, to get in touch with you, get help from you, they know where to go. So Norma, why don't you start with your website?
Actually, Rosemary and I are the same website. It's SaneVax, SaneVax.org. And if I could take just a moment, I'd like to state SaneVax's official position on this contamination issue.
Go ahead.
We feel it is time for Merck and the governments to scientifically prove to medical consumers around the world that residual rDNA bound to aluminum adjuvant is totally harmless. If they cannot do that, they should recall all the contaminated vaccines.
So one question real quick, because I know we only have a couple of minutes left. There was a bioethicist who made a kind of laid down the gauntlet. If anyone could prove that their child was mentally retarded, I think was Michelle Bachmann's comments, but brain damaged. And there is a father who came forward out of Australia who has verification that indeed his daughter has neurological damage. Have you heard anything more about that? Has that gotten any attention? Is there been any response from
there
the bioethicist?
A lot of attention
connected
to it, but not much response. Dr. Kaplan has become very, very quiet lately.
Yeah, unbelievable. Which, and by the way, he does have ties to the vaccine, doesn't he?
Oh, well, yes, he does. And to get into that at this point would run your show another hour.
No, we'll do. We'll save that for a further conversation. But I think everyone listening has really gotten the message that this issue is very murky, very suspect. It is filled with deceit, deception, potential harm, and this Gardasil, push that we're hearing about and may even be mandated in states. It already is in two states, I believe, and California's looking at it, is an absolute disaster. And if people want to share their thoughts with their lawmakers, is there any place that people can go to express their outrage at the use and the use of this vaccine at all, or mandating it, or just if they need to go to report an adverse reaction, where do they go, and can you give them a website for that?
Rosemary, do you want to address the victims hotline and the Citizen Speak blog?
We have a victims hotline that we've organized, and it's got representatives from all over the United States and all over the world. It's also international. And it has numbers of people in your local area that you can contact and talk to about issues such as that. And it is on SaneVax.org.
Okay. Great. So people just need to go to SaneVax, SaneVax.org, and they can get that hotline number.
Yes.
Okay. Well, we've come to the end of this really important show, and I just am so grateful to both of you, Norma and Rosemary, not just for spending the time with us today, but for the absolutely invaluable work you are doing and your passion, your purpose. And I look forward to creating these conversations, which we will be getting together in the next few weeks, to fully inform people, and hopefully the message will go out far and wide. So, my heartfelt thanks to both of you for the wonderful work you're doing.
And our heartfelt thanks to you for helping us get the word out. God bless you.
Thank you. So we've come to the end of this fascinating show. I want to thank all of you for listening. I want to remind you, please opt into What Women Must Know or go to my Facebook page, facebook.com/whatwomenmustknow, to be able to be sent the ongoing conversations that I will be doing with Norma and Rosemary and leading worldwide experts giving you the truth about Gardasil. And until next time, I just wish you all a wonderful week, and remember to always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.